Welcome, members, to a special meeting of the Audit Committee. We will start the meeting, but we will adjourn at the point where we get to item five. If the auditor has not arrived, we are waiting for him, and we hope he'll be here by the time we get to that point. If not, we will adjourn the meeting. So, Chairman's notices. Sound recording of meetings. Please note that the Council will be recording any part of this meeting held in open session for subsequent publication on the Council's website. Members of the public attending the meeting with a view to speaking are deemed to be given permission to be included in the recording. Fire. In the event of a fire, a siren will sound. Please use the fire exits marked with the running man. The fire assembly point is outside the main entrance to the council offices. Please gather there and await further instructions. Health and safety. Please be advised of the different levels of flooring within the council chamber. There are steps behind the main horseshoe as well as to the side of the room. Closed circuit television. This meeting is being monitored by CCTV. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is apologies for absence.
We've received apologies.
I think everyone's here. Okay, thank you. Minutes of the last meeting. Pardon?
No, we've received no apologies.
Oh, yes, we are missing Councillor Skeens. Yeah, we haven't got his apologies. And we haven't got a substitute. No.
No.
Minutes of the last meeting, members. So I'll go through each page. And this was the last meeting held on the 13th of June. Page 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11. Are you happy to accept those minutes, please? Thank you. So the next item, we do need the auditor here. So I'm afraid, members, we will have to adjourn the meeting until...
Do you want to bring item 5?
Okay, all right.
And then adjourn, then I can give an update.
Okay, so, sorry, members, we will take item 6 now, which is any other business that the chairman of the committee decides as urgent. And Kamal would like to update us the current position on the statement of accounts. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. With regard to the statement of accounts, this special meeting was originally set up to receive the statement of accounts. However, work has been ongoing in terms of getting the statement of accounts to a stage where we can finalize them with the external auditor, Deloitte's, and most of the work has now been completed. The statement of accounts are now being drawn up in their final version for forwarding on to the external auditor by very early next week, Monday or Tuesday next week. I have got a meeting set up with the external auditor, the audit manager, and the partner next Friday to go through the final issues that may... They may come to us with. The reason for that is that they will compare the original version of the statement of accounts we provided to them, from which they did the audit work in the main, to the final version, which we think is the complete product now, to track the changes between the two documents and verify the changes. And all those changes are in accordance that we brought through into the statement of accounts are in accordance with the discussions that have already taken place. So there's nothing new that we are bringing out within the statement of accounts from the first version to the current version that they don't know about. It's through discussion. We have agreed changes to the statement of accounts on the basis of discussions which we have put through, so they'll just check and track it through. The main area that I need to bring to your attention, really, is that the auditors have questioned some of the assumptions built into some of our property valuations. And their property specialist and our valuer was the district valuer, the valuation office, who we had appointed to undertake our valuations, have been discussing their assumptions and their methodology and everything. The methodology accords with the accounting code of practice, the CIFAS accounting code of practice, which governs the way that the statement of accounts will be drawn up and the disclosures and the reporting standards that are required to be met. However, in order to arrive at these figures for the valuations, the valuer makes assumptions on various economic criteria and economic factors. And the external auditor's specialist is questioning some of those assumptions. So effectively, it is a professional valuer to professional valuer that the discussion has to happen rather than accountant to the auditor. And whatever the outcome of that is, we will have to then have to discuss it with them and come to a conclusion on that. So that's the current state of affairs. My target, and I'm working to a target that we hopefully, this depends on the external auditor as well and their timescales in order to produce a report for yourselves and an audit opinion on their statement of accounts, is to bring it to the end of September meeting to conclude the matter so that we can move on from the 18-19 financial year and start budgeting exercise for the 2021 financial year, because we need to start putting together a budget for next financial year, and therefore we need to start the work quite soon on that, considering the transformation that the council is going through. So that is the update at the moment. I'm hoping and I'm really, really pushing for the auditors to complete their work and agree the final statement of accounts and their audit opinion view on the accounts by in 2 weeks' time, so that we can start feeding the reports into the committee cycle for the end of September. But obviously that is subject to how the auditors will come back to us on any issues. But as far as I'm concerned, all the figures, financial figures in the statement of accounts to our financial systems and the reporting standards required to be met are all in agreement. So in terms of figures, we are reporting the correct figures. The auditor manager has said there is nothing that she is concerned about with regard to the figures or the balance sheet or the income and expenditure account on the face of the statement of accounts. It is now down to this final issue of the valuation. So I'm in a way comforted by the fact that we are not questioning figures anymore, but also need to push on this valuation issue. Thank you.
I would just say, having been on the audit committee last time, and we did have different external auditors, this exact same issue was raised about the valuation of our assets. So I don't know what happened to clarify the figures, but we did do that in the end, so there must be some record of something somewhere. So it just sounds as though it's the same issue. The auditors tend to look at it differently somehow.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Chair. So that probably has partly answered my question, which is, I mean, that was very helpful. The method of valuation, how has that changed from 17-18? Is it the same method of valuation that was accepted last year?
Yes. The method of valuation changes slightly each year in accordance with the requirements of the accounting standards. And the accounting standards have changed slightly in terms of new standards coming in and catching property valuations within those standards. In addition to other valuations for other sorts of assets we have, like financial assets and the like, IFRS 9 and other standards that have come through. But IFRS, International Financial Reporting Standard 9. So, but what happens is that SIPFA produces a code of practice for accounting in local government, which really is the Bible by which I, as the professional accountant belonging to SIPFA, have to follow, and which is in legislation required to be followed. So it actually sets out the format of our accounts and the presentation of our accounts and the disclosure notes and the disclosures that we have to make. Now, in terms of the valuations, we have to understand that the external auditor last year in 2017-18 was a different auditor to the current one, and each auditor follows their own assurance process and assurance procedures. And Deloitte's, it's their first year here, have taken in a little bit more deeper dive into it, because obviously it's their first year and they've involved their specialists, and the specialists are now wondering about the assumptions used and wanting to understand that, and not so much as questioning, but wanting to understand why those assumptions were used by our valuer. And also they look at other authorities that they are auditing and compare the valuations. So it's not so much the methodology. The methodology is correct. I've been assured of that. The methodology used is fine, but it's the assumptions being built to operate the methodology. So the methodology could be that a piece of asset is actually valued at its depreciated value over a period of time. But the other assumptions might be economic factors as to what rental values it could achieve, and under the circumstances, what yields it could achieve. And that is really purely a surveyor's view at the time, which might be different from another surveyor, and that's where they are at, really.
Thank you. I sort of understand all that, but at the end of the day, we need to get our accounts signed off. I mean, that's the most important thing, and we need to understand what these are actually going to look like as well. So my question really is, Chairman, through you to the Section 151 office, is if we look at both methodologies, I won't try and say that again. Is there a huge difference in values? Are we talking about a huge amount of money here, or it's just to do with assumptions and the methodology that goes with it? Because if we're not talking about huge amounts of difference, we need to press on with this, and very, very quickly.
In terms of the valuations, I'm not sure that it will make a huge amount of difference to the valuations, but the issue is that if the external auditor doesn't agree with the assumptions, and then it requires a change in the values on the balance sheet, then we'll have to obviously go and open up the accounts and make all the changes in terms of the correct valuations being put through, which is a fairly evolved task in terms of making sure it feeds through all the various accounting entries that we would have to undertake. Failing that, I'm saying to the, I've already laid down the sort of marker for them to consider, is that if there are changes to the valuations as a result of their discussions, then can we bring them in as a beginning of year 1920 adjustment, rather than be and agree that they can make a note of that in terms of their reporting to yourselves as members. So I'm trying to short circuit the procedure of getting the accounts signed off, but with an understanding of when and how we'll make the adjustment. Obviously, at the end of the day, the external auditor will make his own decision, and we can argue against it or not, but whether they would qualify the accounts as a result of that is a question. I'm hoping they will not do, and I have been assured that it's not a qualification issue, but it's making the adjustments if the figures have changed, and at what point in time we make the adjustments. In the last financial year, then we rerun the, make the changes, and then they rerun the statement of accounts with all those changes through, put into them. Or we say, make a note of it, and we're at the beginning of this year, like 1st of April, balances brought forward in our accounts, We will make those adjustments as a beginning of year in 1920, but we will make a disclosure within the statement of accounts to say that that's what would happen. So there's various ways of being able to deal with it, but that requires the agreement of the auditor.
Okay. I'd just like to ask the 151 officer if he can give us a worst scenario final date for the sign-off, and also has he got any personal concerns relating to those?
Madam Chairman, through you, I don't have any personal concerns in terms of the statement of accounts and what they show. They balance. The balance sheet balances, the income and expenditure account shows the correct entries and all the various statements that we have to include within the statement of accounts all balance. They can be verified within our financial management system in terms of where the figures come from. So I'm not concerned about that. What I would say with regard to the timescales, I am pushing and working hard to get to the September. I think it's September 29th, is it? 26th. September 26th committee, this committee is meeting on September the 26th. I'm pushing very hard, which means that we've got to get the papers ready to go into the system mid-September. Now, that might be tight, but I'm hoping that with my meeting with the external auditor next Friday, we would be able to meet that, because the reports will be fairly straightforward to do once the statement of accounts are agreed and the external auditor can do their reporting to you. So I'm pushing for September. Failing that, I am saying it would definitely be October meeting. But that is long stop. The push is for end of September, because I want to get on with other work and put last year to bed. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So we go back to then agenda item 5. Which is the internal audit report. Sorry.
Apologies, Madam Chairman. I may have missed it, but agenda item 4, a declaration of interests.
Oh, yes.
I can't remember that, so I would just like to declare. Non-pecuniary, it's largely to do with one of the appendices. I think it's the risk one, and it does mention flooding and economic partnerships and all that business. So I'm declaring I'm Essex County Council, of course, in flooding and various partnerships with economics. We have relationships.
Thank you. Any other members have any interest to disclose? Apologies that I overlooked that agenda item. So, members, we'll go on to then agenda item 5, which is an internal audit update report. Now, it is one item, but there are various recommendations. So we're going to deal with each recommendation in turn. Each one of them is an appendix. So I will go across to Mr. Rubens to go through each appendix, and then we'll ask questions after each one, if there are any. Thank you.
Thank you, and apologies, I was slightly late. We have four different reports here. So the first report is our progress report. So that sets out where we are on the current audit activity. So talking to page 3 of that report, you'll see we are presenting four reports here today. Two are contained within the progress report, so I will cover them as part of this item. There are two others where we've presented the report in full, and they're each their own report, and then we also have the follow-up of recommendations. So I would say overall we are making good progress. We've already got some reports out for this year. There's been a slight delay, obviously, with changes in some of the senior staff, just in getting owners of each of the reports that we're going to do sorted out, but that has now happened, so we're cracking on with the programme, and I would hope we'll have a sort of regular stream of reports to the next few meetings. So if I talk to you about the first one, which we've summarised, which is the GDR compliance report, that's on page 6 of this item. So this is the general data protection regulations. Members may well be aware of these. They're the sort of new regulations around privacy of data that you hold, and they are important because there's some quite large fines if you breach those regulations. But the good news is, and we've given a very positive report on your processes for this, substantial assurance over the design of your processes and moderate over the effectiveness. So on the whole, we think you've got good controls in place, good policies and procedures, you're taking the right action if there are any breaches, and you have a good training program as well, which has been well attended. So very positive. The key things we've said that you need to focus on is about making sure, having done your initial assessments about the impact of, say, privacy data, you need to keep those up to date so you know exactly new data that comes in, how important it is and how you need to keep it secure. And also, secondly, to make sure that not only your own process is sound, but the contractors that you deal with, the third parties, have got good processes as well. So, making sure you get the assurances from them that they have those in place. So that was that report. And then the second one as part of this progress report is the local development plan report, which is on page 9 of this item. If you've got different pages. Okay, I've taken it from the website. So again, it's a positive report, moderate assurance for design and effectiveness. There's obviously been a long history about getting your LDP approved, but it has obviously been approved. Again, we think you've got good processes in place in terms of very clear risk register around the achievement of the LDP. There's been clear public consultation and so on. So lots of good things there. The key things, again, that we've said you perhaps need to focus on is around having a sort of formal monitoring process around the things you want to achieve through your LDP to track those, and also making sure that on the planning side you have sort of clearer, better deadlines for some of the actions you need to take around that. But as with the previous report, we've had a good response from officers on that. There's clear action plan, and we will follow those up as part of the normal follow-up process. So that's all I was going to say on that item. I'm happy to break at this point for any questions. If you look at the response, which is on the next page, you'll see what officers are saying, that there was one done in the end for the main March one in 2017. It was the 2016 one that there hadn't been any output from that. But I would argue the council, ultimately it's your residents. You'll want to make sure that they are kept informed, whether it's by you or by them. It's a low priority recommendation.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. Regarding the GDPR, which sounds all very, very good, you did say actually in your delivery, taking the right action if there are any breaches. What sort of breaches and what is the action taken? Because I find that quite interesting. For that statement to be made, there must have been breaches. And how many are we talking about?
I'm only going from memory, but I think it was only something like two or three, and they were quite minor ones. You know, these breaches do happen, and I don't know, I can't remember the specifics, but quite often, you know, you might accidentally have sent an email to someone outside the organisation with personal data on it. They clearly were not important ones because you didn't have to kind of escalate them, but you know, they were identified and notified in the right way.
If I can ask Mr. Rubins a question for you, Chairman, and it's with regards to the local development plan. Is he satisfied that we are monitoring the delivery of Section 106 agreements properly?
That was outside the scope of that particular audit, I'm afraid, so I can't give you that assurance. I mean, if it is an area that members are concerned about, it is something we could obviously look at as a part of a separate audit. So limited over the design of controls, moderate over effectiveness. There were, at the time we were doing the audit, the team was going through, you know, some change, and there were some vacancies within the team, and that may explain some of the issues that we found. There were two high-priority findings that we found. Firstly, there was a lack of policies and procedures for the team, so they were very experienced, but obviously if you've got new people coming in without policies and procedures, there's a risk that things will not be followed. And as part of that, we thought there was a general lack of documentation. So we've given the example of a couple of dangerous structures that had been reported to the team, and there was no documentation to show that the structures had been looked at and were okay, although the team did tell us that they had done that, and they were satisfied, but there was no documentation or evidence around that. The second high priority was around just general lack of management information and lack of targets for the area. So, you know, fairly fundamental things, really, but they have been accepted. There's a new system that was due to be put in place, and that was felt that would address many of the issues in the report. We've got a clear action plan, again, which we will follow up. The other part of the report that might be of interest at the back of the report is some benchmarking around your fees and charges for building control. It is always interesting to compare yourself against other authorities. You know, some of the fees that you charge are below average, so there might be some scope to look at those, but obviously it's all up to sort of local factors that you may want to take into account. But again, I'm happy to take any questions on the report.
Members, any questions on that report? Councillor Shannon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's not actually a question. I'd just like to highlight, in my view, I think there's been some difficulties in the building control area in terms of resources and everything like that. And I know these issues have arisen, and obviously they should be pointed out, but I think, bearing in mind the situation, and other matters which I won't go into because they could be seen as personal, not to me, but other people, I think, you know, really they've done the best they can in the situations they were faced with. I'd just like to highlight that.
Thank you, Councillor Channer. Well, as the auditor said, it will be followed up, so we look forward to the follow-up report. Any other questions on that appendix, members? So we go on to the next appendix, which is the risk management, and that starts on page 53 on our system.
Thank you. So the only reason this has been brought in full is simply because it covers your risk management arrangements, and we think as the audit committee it's something you should be interested in. I know you do look at the risk register, so therefore we've brought it in full, but there's no opinion given. This was more of a sort of advisory piece, a benchmarking piece. I would say, you know, if we're standing back and looking at where you are on risk management, you're probably, compared to other authorities that we audit, slightly below average, I would say, but not, you know, a long way below. I think you have, you know, some good processes in place, but there is work to do to make it more sophisticated, and I know you're looking at, again, bringing in a new system to be able to do that. You know, some of the good things that we saw, you know, in terms of having, you've got a corporate risk register, you've got your member training, you know, there are some good things there. But in terms of looking at, and we were delving down, you know, how robust is the risk process there, we were finding that, you know, risks weren't being consistently documented, identified with, you know, proper action plans and mitigating actions. So I think there's work to be done around that. And needing a sort of key performance indicators for your risk process as well, so you can see how well it's doing over time, and linking your risk to your corporate objectives. So they're probably some of the key areas. It's quite a detailed report. Again, officers have said they are, you know, considering all of these areas. They're going through, looking at the risk process and looking at a new system. So round about the end of the year, early next year, we should see the results of those actions. And again, we will follow those up. And I'm happy to take any questions or comments.
Members, any comments on that part of the report? Councillor Fluker.
Well, I mean, Mr. Rubin's just referred to some benchmarking, and I guess the figure's on page 56, but it seems in the benchmarking, the only place where we're short is around risk assessments. So, you know, I wondered if either of the directors could explain to us how they expect to close that gap, because they seem to be doing everything else correctly when it comes to governance, management and reporting, but it's just risk assessment, which I find quite odd that it's not that one. You know, I find it odd that it's that one on its own and not, and that doesn't impact on any of the others.
Sorry, if I perhaps just put it in context before the director's answer. I mean, all we are doing on this particular one is just saying that we've looked at another district council recently, and this is how you compare to that district council. But if I'm comparing you against our sort of whole portfolio of councils, and it does include some bigger ones, so you might say they've got more resources and they've got more ability to put time into these things. You know, what we're showing here is, you know, you're at twos and threes, and we do see some councils getting to sort of threes and fours, which is, you know, and five being the best that you can get to. So I would still say there's some work to be done across the board. You may not want to be five on everything. That might require quite a bit of investment and time to be able to get to that. So you may only want to be a four, say. But, you know, what I'm saying is I don't think it's just one area that you need to look at.
Chairman. Yes, the risk assessment itself in conversation with the auditor when this work was done, I think there were two main issues. One was around the level of recording, which at a corporate level was good, but it was looking at the risk assessment around some of the service plan level risks and making sure that they were managed through and properly assessed. And I think they're done, but it's making sure that it is recorded properly. The other key issue was, in terms of risk assessment, we use a matrix, which is standard practice, but we use a 4x4 matrix. In discussion with the auditor, they suggested that we went to a 5x5 matrix, so there's more granularity to the understanding when we're assessing the risks of where they stand, how we're addressing them. So that's something that we're looking at and is linked to the recommendation.
Ms. Carmel?
Yeah, if I can just come in here through you, Chairman. I think there was also a proposal to develop our risk management practices, and the previous Director of Resources had some discussions with Mr. Rubens, and I think I've now got Mr. Rubens, the brief that they would carry out in terms of the costing that has been provided. I think the piece of work would cost around about £9,000 that has been reported previously or in this report by the previous Director of Resources. So I am now picking up the brief, and I shall be talking to Mr. Dobson regarding how we take this forward. And that piece of work, it will mean spending some money, but it will give some more resilience within the council in terms of their preparation and understanding of risk management, certainly in the transformed new council post-November, where there has been quite a lot of changes with regard to people coming into new jobs and being able to then understand the risks that they have to manage and the like. So it comes at an opportune time where the organization is going through a change, and that change is followed by putting in place the training that should be followed through with, particularly with regard to risk, especially at a time of change. Thank you.
Thank you for that. I just want to clarify that, because I think this £9,000 was to do with fraud assessment. And not actually...
Well, it was, although it will cover the fraud risk management, so your risks in terms of fraud would be covered as part of that bit of work.
Okay, all right. Okay, thank you for that clarification. Any other questions, members? Councillor Harker?
Are we going to adopt the 5-5 model? Because it's a lot fairer.
I think that would be good practice for us to do that. So, particularly when we look at we're changing some of our software around, and obviously we'll go through a process this year in doing that. That seems the appropriate time to do that.
Yeah, 3, which is an average, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions on that point? Okay, well, we go on to Appendix 4, the last appendix, which is the follow-up recommendations, starting on page 75 on our report.
So, thank you. This is quite a short report because there's only been 3 new recommendations that have become due to be actioned in this particular period, one of which has been completed and 2 are in progress. There's one where we didn't get a response, which was on the flooding, which I think is due again to the changes in staff, but we'll obviously be following that up for next time to make sure we do get a response. But happy to take any comments or questions.
Thank you. Any comments, members? Questions? No? Okay, thank you. So are we happy then, members, to accept those 4 recommendations? Agreed? Thank you. So I'm just getting back to my agenda. Right, so we have dealt with agenda item 6 already, and I don't have anything else. So we will close the meeting at 3:40.